Cape Talk, health and wellness.
And we have Darren Green, Dr. Darren Green, on the line. Tell us a little bit about what the human papillomavirus actually is.
Yeah, so, I mean, we have over 100 types belonging to the family of human papillomavirus. And what's interesting to note about it is they're associated with different levels of risk. So there are about 40 subtypes, and they're all highly categorized according to numbers. The reason why we focus so much on it now is obviously the association with the high, and I mean very high incidence, as you mentioned, one in 42 women here with cervical cancer. And the subtypes are graded according to their risk of causing cancer, and 40 out of the 100 subfamilies or types of human papillomavirus are associated with different types of cancers. So cervical cancer being the one that we focus on a lot because it's easy to screen for and easy to actually get an intervention and treat for. But other cancers associated with papillomavirus include anogenital cancers. So that would mean anything affecting the skin in and around the anorectal region, as well as things like genital warts. And then obviously the association with the skin of the throat and the back of the throat, the mouth, the tongue, and even obviously the lips. So definitely an association with those 40 types with the ability to cause cancer.
Can we treat the HPV virus?
Yes, we can treat it. The best treatment is actually prevention. So instead of just treating it and cutting it out at early stages in its development in terms of what it can cause with the pre-runners of cancer, let's just use the cervix as an example. So HPV is associated with putting stress under those epithelial cells at the junction, which is called the transition zone, where the vaginal epithelium changes into a different type of skin cell at the entrance to the uterus. And at that zone, that transition zone, that's where the abnormal cells that are acted upon with the infection actually then start mutating and developing at uncontrollable rates in abnormal forms. And that, per definition, is what leads to cancer. So, you know, that's exactly how it comes about.
And that can take a number of years before a tumor develops. Is that correct?
That's the sad part about it, is because you won't know that you've got HPV necessarily if you're not screening for it with regular pap smears until, obviously, it's caused a significant clinical problem, either in the form of pain, redness, swelling, et cetera, associated with that zone that I've just described.
Mm.
And it can grow so slowly, you know, up to, you know, 10 years before it becomes a significant a lesion. So, yes, it is certainly something that can be treated, but in terms of being cured, the cure is to not be infected with it in the first place.
So it doesn't always present with symptoms, is that correct?
No, and it doesn't always lead to cancer. It leads to cancer in associated conditions where, for example, you have an increased viral load of HPV due to obviously contracting it from someone. There are two ways, the horizontal transmission way is obviously through sexual intercourse. Vertical transmission can occur from mother to baby at birth. If the mom has genital warts, for example, and has the infection present in the perineum in that area, in the South Pole, when baby is born, and if that's not treated adequately, and you can even contract it from birth as a baby.
Let's talk a little bit now about who is at highest risk.
Yes, so obviously people that are sexually active are at risk, depending on this. So the contact, skin-to-skin contact, even condoms aren't foolproof in preventing the transmission of the virus. You must remember that there's an association with genital warts as well. So, you know, basically skin contact. So people that have partners that are sexually active as well, you might have one partner now, but their history, their sexual history before them encountering or meeting you plays a massive role as well. That's obviously is something you need to put out on the table quite early in all relationships, and then be tested and screened, perhaps even before entering a sexual relationship with someone. Make sure there's been an intervention plan in your relationship.
Okay, now let's talk about the hot topic of vaccination. Is it a very effective vaccine? And does it treat all types of HPV or all types?
No, certainly not. So the big one. So the reason why the World Health Organization put through a huge surge to actually find a vaccination for HPV is because of the incidence of cervix cancer.
Yes.
The subtypes associated with that specifically, they are 16 and 18. And there are two main vaccinations available in the world. The first one that came out was called Cervarix, and that covered the two subtypes, 16 and 18. But the other there are other subtypes obviously associated with things like genital warts, even plantar warts and butcher's warts on your hands and feet, the other subdivisions. And what was quite interesting to note, you asked about the efficacy. There's another vaccination, which is called Gardasil, which is a quadrivalent vaccine. In other words, it's got four different subtype strains for which it provides cover. That is then obviously aimed at not only preventing the cervical cancer, but also looking at genital wart reduction rates as well. And that was introduced into massive groups in the Australian population, which had a 99% cure rate for genital warts from 2007 to 2011, where they brought the incidence of genital warts in the population down from about 12% to 0.8% in a period of 4 years. And thus, it's become such an important part of the vaccination schedules in schools. And obviously the contentious issues now are whether boys should be vaccinated as well, which would make sense.
Are Cervarix and Gardasil both available in South Africa?
They're both available. So Cervarix is the one that is bivalent with two strain covers. So that's 16 and 18. And then, as I mentioned, Gardasil, the quadrivalent one, and so forth. And the schedule for those that want to know are basically one injection stat. The booster vaccination is given in the first case after about two months. And the last one basically after 3 months. And in the case of Gardasil, after 5 months.
So it's three injections?
Three. Schedule of three, yeah.
Does that vary if the child is younger? Because I've been speaking to some parents actually in the newsroom before I came into the studio, and some say that if you have it younger, then you only get two injection installments. Is that incorrect?
No, it's not incorrect. So people over the age of 30 get three. And it's also the thing that comes into the equation.
Did you say 30? Sorry, 30 or 13?
30.
Okay.
30.
Okay.
Yeah. So, then you would consider getting the third booster injection as well. It's also got to do with the load of your antibodies that protect you against HPV, and that can certainly obviously be tested as well, whether you've got immunity or not. A similar thing is, for example, when we vaccinate people against tetanus, where they need a booster that covers them for 10 years, and they might need a booster after that.
Now let's talk about when girls and boys, or if boys, should be getting it, and what age. I mean, in South Africa, in government schools, girls have been receiving it since grade four. Is that correct?
That's correct. So our Department of Health have rolled out the protocol in the country, where the first rollout went out, I think, in 2018. Also help them a bit with promoting that in our communities and educating the public about that. So we basically roll them out for grade four girls, or 9-year-olds rather, because that is an age that is normally a good age to ensure that they actually are vaccinated before there is sexual contact, firstly. I don't know how many people are living in bubbles and don't understand that first sexual contact, the average in South Africa, is often under the age of 12. And I think parents that didn't know that certainly need to become aware of that as well. It's a lot of touchy-feely experimenting things that happen in youngsters as well. So we need to not turn a blind eye to that and be vigilant.
Exactly. And boys too, is that correct?
Yes, exactly. That is why Australia have actually promoted vaccinating their boys as well. But the rollout in South Africa has been for girls only, and I think it was simply due to a cost issue because of the incidence of cervical cancer being the main thrust in preventing cervical cancer and the thousands of deaths that they can help prevent by that. But in terms of our planning and spreading HPV and eliminating and eradicating the virus completely, one would certainly want to do the male population as well.
And where can people get it if they are not at a government school? Can they go to pharmacies? Can you get it from your GP?
Yes, 100%. So I think first things first is have the conversation with your GP, and then obviously they will discuss, he or she will discuss the pros and cons. If you have any allergies to certain vaccinations, do you have egg allergies, for example, or certain preservative allergies? And that's often what prevents people having adverse effects to vaccines. It's just having a decent screening process with whoever is going to be prescribing the vaccination. And then they'll refer you to an appropriate pharmacy and prescript it properly in terms of the schedule, how you should get it and at what frequency and so forth. And then you'd also know what to expect in terms of the swelling on your arm, a bit of a red bump that could take up to 10 days to settle completely. And it is a bit tender in the soft tissue. And, you know, just to know what to expect.
Let's talk a little bit about the rare cases of side effects that have been in the news.
Sure.
This should not be enough to stop you, correct, from having the vaccination. What are your views on that?
You have to, 100%. So people have to understand, when we speak about vaccinations, it's smallpox, for example, and influenza, and we can bring quite a few into the limelight.
I mean, measles, recently in America.
Yeah, exactly. And we know, finally, that all the theories, postulated theories about the link of vaccinations to autism have now finally been discredited. The person that actually came up with those suggestions and theories has been scrapped from the international health role completely because of their negative contribution to the association in the field of science. Mm. But in terms of autism or those, so that for those that didn't know, that's all been disproved already with a massive amount of studies that have been published, and it's all over Facebook and Twitter, etc., if you really want to look into that. But in terms of adverse effects, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, one would certainly want to look at, so the incidence, if you're looking at one in, let's say, I think we said the incidence you mentioned earlier on was one in something like 2 million, in terms of vaccinations. Remember, the vaccination is only as good as the herd. So if the herd don't all vaccinate, then there's going to be leaks and exposure in between for that virus to actually mutate and become actually a little bit clever and come back at some stage with a different strain almost that is even more difficult to encounter or to counter. So in this case, one would look certainly at providing protection of the entire herd, and that's why we have to work on educating the public as to how the vaccination actually works.
And also the alternative and the fact that cervical cancer is a killer, really. And
it's a preventable killer of young women aged, obviously, between 15 and 44 is when we have the highest incidence, obviously, of HPV being demonstrated. And, you know, it's a simple thing to treat if we know that the presence of HPV is there, firstly, because then we can plan when the follow-up needs to be done to look at those cells changing at that zone, which I described a little bit earlier, the transition zone. Then we can plan, do you need a 6-month follow-up or a year follow-up or a 5-year follow-up with your gynae or your GP to do the next pap smear. And then if it's early stages of differentiation of those cells, like a SYN1 lesion, for example, we know what we can allow to continue and what not to continue. You also then know how to manage your sexual relationship in terms of your partner and treating them as well. So very useful.
Darren, we've got a question that I'd like to put to you on the WhatsApp line.
Gladly.
Hi, I presented with nodules on my vocal cords about a year ago and needed surgery to remove as I was unable to speak or vocalize for 15 months. Was informed that it was HPV. My question first is, how do I determine what HPV it is? And secondly, how do I ensure that I don't pass this on to my partner? And that's from Donovan, who
is 36.
Great question. 36.
Yes, absolutely. Great question. So nodules often occur on the vocal cords due to high stress and overuse. And some people have a propensity, even genetically, to develop nodules, just as they do for polyps in the nasal canal as well. But just understanding, firstly, that if it's demonstrated HPV, they would stain and do histopathological staining after the biopsies were taken on those nodules and be able to tell you which subtype you have. And also, as I mentioned, there are 40 subtypes associated with developing cancers out of the 100, you know, and then you might not even have one of those. If I mention the fact that HPV is associated, the papilloma is associated, like a cauliflower, et cetera, with warts. If you think about a nodule, it's a growth, it's a, you know, protruding growth on the vocal cord, exactly the same. It basically affects skin cells particularly. So it might not even be a high-risk strain that leads to cancer that the person that's made the query has. So certainly you could find out from the histology report. They could stain it and definitely give you some feedback. They do subtyping, depending on the pathologist involved, and give you that feedback. And then you'd be a lot better informed as to, firstly, what your risks are of conveying it to someone that could develop cancer from it.
And are all HPVs contagious?
Yeah, so certainly the virus on skin contact, yes, they are definitely contagious. One would consider, obviously, the genital subtypes as being more risky in terms of, you know, the ability to spread is a lot higher. And if you think about a butcher's warts, for example, let's say if someone with a wart on his hand just touches you, that subtype shouldn't cause you to have a wart on your hand because of the subtype and it not being a high-risk strain. That subtype of the family is different. So people need to understand that too.
Thanks so much, Dr. Darren Green, for joining us on the line. Good luck with the rest of the rugby match in Stellenbosch.
Oh, yes, thank you. Thank you so much.
That was Dr. Darren Green talking about the HPV virus. We've had a lot of SMSs coming in. Some say they are very against vaccinating and that it causes terrible side effects. And others saying, I had both my daughter and son vaccinated with Gardasil. It is so important in CAPS that everyone vaccinates themselves. Cervical cancer being one of the biggest killers, the second most common cancer in women in less developed regions, with an estimated 570,000 new cases in 2018. That's 84% of the new cases worldwide. It's